Don't you have anything to say, Stanley? You talk so much all the time. You're really the ringleader of this. Gold, too, remained silent. Then Miller left, and the board voted unanimously to ask for his resignation. With Watson's memo recommending Eisner on the table before them, the directors turned to the issue of Miller's replacement. Gold expected Watson to promptly nominate Eisner and for the board to confirm him. Instead, Director Phil Hawley proposed a screening committee to consider a wide range of candidates, adding that it was essential that Miller's replacement have corporate experience, a pointed reference to the fact that Eisner had never run a business on his own. Okay, Watson said. Fine. Gold was stunned. The old guard had turned the tables yet again. At Paramount, Eisner waited for the call from Watson. As the hours passed, his confidence waned. Finally, late in the afternoon, Wells called. How do you feel? How should I feel? Hasn't anyone called you? Wells broke the news that Miller had been fired, but no successor had been named. Eisner had a sinking feeling. He regretted having spoken to Davis. He hung up, left the studio, and drove to see Gold at the Shamrock offices. He doesn't have the guts to call you, Gold said, saying that Watson had meekly accepted Hawley's proposal. No decision was made on you. What do you mean? Eisner asked, incredulous. Last night, Ray told me I was in. I don't know what Ray told you, but it's not done. The fat lady hasn't sung the last aria. That evening, Eisner attended a dinner in Davis's honor at Diller's house. It was a bitter pill, having to pay homage to the man he thought he'd vanquished that very morning. To make matters even more precarious, Diller took Eisner aside to confide that he was leaving Paramount to take the top job at Fox. When Diller's news broke the next week, Davis summoned Eisner and Katzenberg to New York. After having told Davis about the Disney offer, Eisner hardly expected to be offered Diller's position. Still, it was a shock when, after they arrived in New York, Katzenberg called him at his hotel at 2 a.m. The next day's Wall Street Journal had just been delivered to Katzenberg's hotel, and in it was an article reporting that Frank Mancuso, Paramount's head of marketing, would replace Diller as chairman. It quoted Davis at some length discussing his unhappiness with Paramount's market share, and failure to place more new television shows on network schedules. Eisner realized that he was about to be fired. When he met with Davis at noon the next day, a press release announcing his resignation had already been prepared. Eisner had brought along a copy of his contract, which provided incentive compensation and the forgiveness of the loan on his house in the event that he was not offered Diller's job if Diller left. A total of $1.55 million. In his eagerness to be rid of him, Davis readily agreed, saying he just needed Eisner to sign off on the press release. Eisner refused. I want the check for what I'm owed, Eisner said. I can't get a check on such short notice, Davis insisted. That's ridiculous, Eisner said. I'll be back in an hour. He walked out. 20 minutes later, Eisner had his check and approved the press release. He left the building and walked across town to the Park Avenue headquarters of Chemical Bank, where he and his parents had long done their banking. He deposited the check and demanded that it be credited immediately to his account rather than